Oh, look, I mean, Passover's coming up, and we have to drink four glasses of wine for two nights back to back.
I'm going to pass yes. over that idea, Matt.
I like wine. It's good.
You have liking wine in place of like being a complete person with an identity and personality. We get it.
You are listening to Interhost
every other lady at the grocery store.
I prefer beer, to be honest. But anyway,
I need to go get some alcohol to just get through this at this point.
We're ready. Continue.
You are now listening to Boku no Stop, an anime podcast that will roll up to your crib and begin unloading weaponry, comrade. I'm your host, Sybil Arnett, and with me this week is...
crib literal if you're some of the human debris.
Garrett. Yeah.
And a different kind of unloading.
Hey, they unloaded back.
Their content warded for gun violence.
A million. I can add so it. I just had it. Mild child death.
Only some
miles. Mile. We only have a couple of shots at the start.
No. I like the idea of using Taco Bell fire sauce levels to describe child death.
Yeah, there's definitely spicy, and it turns out it was last episode with a rocket warhammer.
If you're British, you could also include the extra mild.
Well, I believe that would have been fire or Diablo in the Taco Bell scale.
But yes, today we're talking about Iron-Blooded Orphans episodes 13 through 14. There will be some discussion of mild child death and maybe spicy child death, depending on how much you liked. Last time, Akihiro rediscovering his lost brother, Masahiro, still being treated as human debris for the pirate fleet of the Brewers, sent to capture Kudelia as a tool of Megillus. One ambush and extended rescue plan later, Masahiro is dying in space, having hurled Akihiro away, denying his captor one bit of victory in his death. I know we had a slight argument about that last week, but he's literally about to say it was instinct not to hurt him.
Okay. So, episode 13, Funeral Rites. So, Masahiro dies in his brother's grasp, refusing to believe Akihiro, claiming that there's anything better for them over the long conversation between the dying child and his brother.
Yeah, this shit goes on like Assassin's Creed long.
Yeah, this is a 6-minute cold open before we get to the actual intro. I checked.
Yeah, it's wild that they moved this to this episode instead of the end of the last one, but it's interesting anyway. It's so funny that while this is happening, the crew of the Hammerhead are like, we gotta keep fighting because he needs to have his last moments with his brother. Like, they explicitly have a conversation about this.
Ozzy and Laughter also are just doing their shit because they can't keep up with the Gundams.
Sure, yeah. But it's just very funny. They're like, wait, we need to keep this, again, like what happened earlier, like, oh, we need to give him space so that he can, like, get the guy back. It's like, no, we need to still give him space so that they can have their conversation before he dies. Meanwhile, Mikazuki is pursuing the Warhammer pirate. He disarms him and slides the katana between the armored machine's joints and eventually pressing him into deranged screaming. And the pirate screams that Mika must be inhuman and that he's drawing this fight out because he enjoys killing humans. And Mika doesn't stop what he's doing, but he does think to himself, like, is that what I'm feeling? Am I enjoying this? Well, I'm not going to think about that right now because this guy deserves to die anyway.
I do always ask myself if I'm enjoying this while recording a podcast.
Hot take. He's not enjoying the murder. He's just enjoying being a weeb, finding the strength in the katana that he is now a fan of.
Uh-huh.
He does praise the katana.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess since we never named him once last episode and this is his brutal finale, we may as well say the punk-coded pirate leader is Kudel Kadel. Rotten piss, dude.
His death is pretty good, like that shot of him like as he's screaming and then he blows up. I liked it.
It is pretty good. Rather than dwell on that, we cut back from the space lanes to Earth, where some sort of high society function is going on. McGillis can hear the constant whispers around them. McGillis, believed to be a bastard son, is the sort of thing most families would hide away, rather than push into a proud military career. And there's gossip, the entire wedding is a power play by the Izanaro Fariyut. McGillis' dad, to put the, whoever the fuck this family is, the
Bodwin
family assets at his command. There's just as much about poor Almeria, though, and when McGillis sees her runs away in a tizzy from the party, he heads out to the balcony to comfort her, which is where we leave the planet.
This scene goes way longer than I want it to.
Oh, you don't like seeing him pick up his bride and give her a dance out alone?
No, I don't actually.
Like, the part where, like, the dude is saying, like, she's barely out of diapers, and I'm just like, the guy's right, though.
Also, let's try to make it sweet looking. The fact that they're all European coded, which adds another layer of problematic to all of this.
Oh, naturally.
All right, but also, at least we have an age for her. She's 9, so she's not that young.
That is so young, my friend.
That is so young, but that is not fresh out of diapers.
It might as well be. As someone with a 10-year-old who remembers what a 9-year-old is like, it might as well be, actually. I'm sorry you're 70 and don't know about children.
I just raised and sold one. It was under a year ago.
I did like again, Mario Okada's writing this, right? Yes. The whole, like, I can't dance with you cheek to cheek. Like, that's, like, as a writing bit, that was nice. But then the implication of, well, then I'll just have to, like, carry you in my arms and dance with you that way so that we can dance cheek to cheek is, like, also, like, yeah, exactly. She's a fucking child. This is gross. Stop trying to make this sweet.
Don't worry. This is a Mario Kata joint. There's a payoff.
Boy, I'm sure there will be.
It's in season one, at least, so you get that.
Hooray, I don't have to wait a year.
And then, in space, there are a lot of emotions running high as we return to a victorious Tekadan aboard the Brewer battleship.
At Dante's urging, Orga tells the surviving pirate debris kids that unless they really do feel like Tekadan can shove it, they could go to Mars, work with or for the company, and try to build a less likely to be fatal life. Meanwhile, Mika comes across Shino beating himself up over losing men on the mission, swearing he should have died instead of them, which is probably true. I don't know who you are.
He was the guy in the hallway who watched his guys get got by the kids?
Yeah, no, I got that. I mean, as a person, beyond this one beat, I don't know who you are. It would be fine if you also died in their place. Mika tells him that's bullcrap and it's just dishonoring the dead. The Brewer's assets are to be claimed as payment, both the slaves aboard, the mobile suits, and one of the battleships. There are some comments that make it sound like the second battleship winds up going to Nausea. Orga says they're going to...
I feel like we glossed over the part during the... when the guys are on the ship and they run into the children, and then...
That's why it's my
own. A lot of death happens.
Do you want to make it extra spicy?
No, but I'm just saying we're referencing it here, and I'm like, wait a second, did we even talk about that?
We didn't, because it is literally just a quick firefight in the boarding of the Brewer ship.
Yeah,
I mean, it is very sad. Emotional stakes, I guess, for later in the episode, though, should be brought up.
Yeah, because they were gonna basically just not deal with the children, right? They're like, oh, there's more children here in like one of the rooms, and then they go to leave, and then one of the kids from the pirate crew picked up a gun and started shooting at them, even though they weren't being fought against. And then basically, I assume like that whole room just got lit up, and probably most of the kids in there died.
Question mark?
Sure, we see a lot of them later on, though.
Yeah, well, they said there were. There's like another room of children. Like, there's
a lot.
Yeah,
it's uncertain if it's the same kids, and I didn't go comparing heads.
Yeah, they got the Costco pack full of kids, and they're like, you know, some of them will be fine.
Costco's next episode.
It's the most brutal thing that we've seen in the show, I think, so far. Or at least, like, sad brutal. Like, there's obviously been brutal stuff, but that one's, like, tragic brutal.
Well, that's why Dante makes a claim to, hey, please don't liquidate these kids, boss.
Yeah, exactly.
Orga says they're going to sell all of the mobile suits when they reach the port, saying we can't go around piloting something that killed Akihiro's brother.
And then they proceed to do that.
Well, Akihiro chose to do that, which is fine.
Yeah, Akihiro makes a choice. Even if
what about the other people? Because they're definitely keeping some of the other ones, too.
I'm just saying that everyone is going to call Akihiro a lunatic for this, but he does make the choice consciously.
Yeah, they, he realizes he gives them the
that
okay.
It's a Gundam frame.
Yeah.
The next stop on their journey is going to be docking at the nearby Dort colonies for resupply and to drop off the Tewa's goods they've been toting. On that note, nobody seems to know where Akihiro is at the moment. The whole boy a lot of people just died and nobody in this crew knows how to grieve right discussion leads to Merabit suggesting, hey, why don't we just hold a quick funeral? This was not a huge CGS policy, and it's so it catches people off guard.
This is got one of my least favorite sci-fi tropes is, whoa, isn't it crazy that a thing that everyone does now is no one does in the future? Like, bro, we don't need 2 minutes about how funerals are now a novelty. Come on.
Okay, but it's just the CGS
crew. I think it's more a novelty to the children.
Crew. Yeah, they're the only ones who don't know.
The other ones know it as a matter of historical fact. The fact that we spent 2 minutes discussing it and talking about, oh, no one really does it anymore. Thank you, turbines.
And here's the meaning of it.
Yeah, fuck off.
All right. Anyhow, Akihiro shows up at the door, opens it, goes, I'm in, and that settles it.
So, after the crew disperses, Merabit pulls Orga aside, noting that he did not have any support for the funeral. And Orga goes on about how he doesn't give two shits about the souls and the afterlife. He says, I'll see them again when I die. Until then, I'm just going to keep as many people alive as possible. And he suggests shut up about that during the ceremony. Keep that shit to yourself. And then you should tell himself that this isn't for the souls of the dead, but it's also for peace for the living, which is probably actually the thing you should have said first, which is like, it's for people to process this and move on. And okay, maybe there's an afterlife, whatever. But as she walks off, he mutters to himself, You like talking down to people, do you, old woman? And then she just yells back, I can still hear you, little boy. And he blushes.
In the maintenance bay, Yuki Nojo bemoans that there's going to be a grim funeral without any flyers. But from the sidelines, little Yumagi says he might have an idea to help with that. The ceremony is pretty taciturn. Orga gives a short speech and various crew members grapple with what you do to remember the dead. Yumagi's idea was to turn a couple of cannon shells into fireworks, which get launched from the main gun as they allow the coffin to float out into space like Spock.
It's true. And I'm going to be that weeb and say the word for fireworks in Japanese includes the characters for flower, so there is kind of a thematic tie to that too. Plus also you have Tekadon, which is a flower, and impermanence of life and all these other themes. Like, it's all there.
Gotcha. I do mention in one of the later conversations they start referring to them as ice flowers, not fireworks. So that's what Matt's referencing.
They also go into somewhat detail of like how they modified the shells to do the specific thing with whatever material was. I want to say magnesium, but that seems wrong.
No, they're missiles, and it's the hydrogen propellant.
Yeah. It was something.
Yep.
In the aftermath, that evening, one of the younger boys can't stop crying, and Ride's trying to get them to calm down because no one can sleep with him like this.
Acha tries to comfort him, but he runs away from her, going, in the subs, no, you don't have any breasts. and then he just runs directly for Fumitan.
It's just too flat, Acha. Oh. I want Fumitan!
Oh, come on!
There's a short scene of the command crew in Nazae's office, and the whole thing ends when Nazae and Amida begin some public displays of affection. And half the crew are like, ew, girls! And a few are blushing and unsure what to say, and Mika just continues to stare straight on.
Popping some food into his mouth. It's pretty good.
Bro, it's so like, what the fuck are you doing, my guy? You just make it out in front of everybody.
He's got like that H.P. Lovecraft stare.
Especially when they draw him off model in some of the background shots. Yes, he absolutely has the Innsmouth look.
Yeah. Naze tells the lads that years with high death rate also have high birth rate. That's right, you can write in your fanfic that we do in fact fuck. Makes you think a lot about what you leave in the world and all that.
Hey, for what it's worth, Tamino has very much said people should be fucking in these stories. That's why he called out another creator a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell do you have your name and you don't have any kind of sex when two people switch bodies? It's weird. You'd think they'd do something with that. Akihiro calls Orca out to the hangar later that evening, saying he wants dibs on the pirate captain's suit.
I didn't get to see my brother long, but this suit, this thing took him from me one last time. I want to make it mine. Quiet revenge.
Orca thinks about it for a second and says, all right, it's yours. Akihiro will now be piloting our second Gundam of the show, the Gujin, even though they do not say that yet.
This is very weird. This is like if you buy your parents' car and when you drive it and you think of it as taking revenge on them.
I drove around my dead father's car for about 5 years and it still had x-rays of his body in it until we had to sell it. So,
okay,
no comment.
But did you drive his car out of spite to try to get revenge on him, or were you just driving his car?
Probably just driving his car, but really, I don't want to think about a lot of any kind of implications dealing with my parents.
The thing also, they did mention the Gujian by name as like a part of the list of stuff they were selling, and they said that one would take a particularly good price because it has an Ahab reactor in it, right?
Yep.
But they're like, oh, I guess we're keeping this one. And I do like that when they take off like the helmet part, you say, oh yeah, there's a Gundam-ass Gundam under there.
Yeah.
Well, we have said this is not what the Gujian looked like. This is something they tanked up because it had the reactor power to move under so much armor.
Yeah, they just took the Roadman armor and just shoved it on there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
In the lower decks, Yamagi is closing up the hangar for the night when Shino comes up to him and asks that when he dies, Yamagi make one of those ice flowers for him as well. Yamagi clams up for a second, then refuses, saying, it's too expensive, and it's a lot of work. I can't just do that for everyone. Shino pauses for a second and smiles, going, all right, that makes sense. Thanks anyway, and you did great today. I want to say put a pin on this, but it's not going to come up again for over a year. Sorry.
Well, I mean, you've already primed me at least to know that what I was looking for here. So we kind of know what's happening.
Sure.
A little bit. It's
I'm just saying there's a second half to this scene, but it's not coming until like, I think the 40s.
So after hours, with most of the ship asleep, Mika is wandering around, still thinking about the pirate's final words, wondering if he does indeed enjoy killing people. And he runs into Kudelia, who's also still up after a chat with Fumitan, mentioning that the Tekadon crew are all children. And whether or not they realize it, they've still got a lot of emotions, but they've buried it very, very deep as a defense mechanism so that they could just carry on with their lives. And he's eating those little, I guess what, space dates?
I refer to them as dates.
Yeah, they're small and they're roughly the same size and they're wrinkly. You can take that phrase out of context whenever you want. He offers her one of his snacks and she notices that his hands are trembling a little. And Kudelia decides, I'm going to do what Fumitan was able to do earlier. Try to comfort him with a hug. And she's like trying to explain this, like, hey, this wasn't my idea. You know, I just saw this earlier and, you know, she's being all blushy about it. And then like Mika pulls back, sort of like takes a moment, to like sort of take it in and then just goes in for a kiss. And then Kudelia, of course, turns even redder, you know, pushes him away, kind of backs off all bashful. And it's like, it's a very, very dramatic jump back.
Yeah, she ninja leaps away. It's maybe a 3-frame sequence. I stole a couple of the frames mm-hmm. from this, it's probably going to be the episode art this week, because they're all good.
Yeah, yeah.
As she sputters out a question of what just happened, Mika just crouches down, picks up the date, and goes to eat it, saying just, "Sorry, I thought you were cute. Guess you didn't like it." Cadelia stammers out a reply, but Mika has already stopped thinking about it, chewing his food and looking out into space. Before the credits kick in, we cut back to Cadelia's patron, Noblis Gordon, looking over a message and giving himself a small speech. There are a lot of people being oppressed by Galahorn these days, all awaiting the appearance of a beautiful revolutionary. I've decided that the stage for the death of Cadelia, Anya Bernstein, will be the colony. The ending animation appears only after a shot of Fumitan at the comms terminal, staring at the necklace her mistress bought.
It takes us into episode 14, Vessel of Hope. We start with Shino and Yamagi in the hangar. Shino is offering himself up to testing transplanting the Laya Vinjana systems from the Brewer mechs into some of the suits Tekadon already had. Yamagi is concerned about this until Shino says he'll test it as often as needed. Shino tells the younger man he wants it too, the power to protect the people he cares about.
And this is where I make a note that yes, Yamagi is gay. Gay for Shino. Just openly gay, and one of the only two characters to do so in Gundam to the point of 2024. That's it. Not subtext, you're not imagining it.
Speaking of attraction, Cadelia didn't sleep well last night, thinking about the kiss. As she curls up into a ball in the hallway, Mika immediately rounds the corner topless and fresh out of the shower, just going, "Hey," and moving on. She screams seriously as the opening rolls.
And this is where we start entering opening and ending themes number 2. Now we have Survivor by Blue and Count, and it shows daily life on the Isaribi with few characters getting little pensive stares. It's a J-Rock song. It's less hard than the first theme. Probably the best character development moment is a procession of various pilots screaming and ramping up thrusters, ending on Atra screaming and curling up in fear, and then Mika completely emotionless in the cockpit. When we resume, we're looking at Fumitan, who is definitely holding up well under the double agent thing, as she stares at the necklace again while reading over the orders to directly march Cadelia to her death. If you pause this to read the tablet, it will spoil the next episode and change, because this was written in English, even in the Japanese release, and very fluently to boot.
Yeah, I did do that.
I did also double-check that, yes.
Yeah, but I think, honestly, I think the end of this episode works better with that knowledge of what's about to happen than having it be a little bit of a surprise, even though we know something bad is going to happen.
Sure, but it also does tell you, oh, we're walking this whole episode into a trap and then only springs it in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
However, a ring at her chamber's doors interrupts, and it's Cadelia herself coming to discuss what's on her mind, poorly.
So as Cadelia keeps going, tripping over herself and concluding that if someone kissed you out of the blue, would you then have to marry them?
That's right. When you pass the blunt, you're getting married.
God, now you have me thinking about the guy and his three weed-smoking girlfriends again. Great. Fumitan, her usual demeanor breaks, and the maid starts laughing politely. Like, she kind of stuffs it down a little. But this is the first time she's actually showed any actual emotion in the show so far as I could tell. Otherwise, she's very, very flat.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, you know, it's interesting to see here. Yeah, she composes herself and sort of, you know, resets herself and then starts the conversation. And her deep, wise advice is, did you just ask this hypothetical man what what his feelings are? Like, you know, just confirm that first. And before Cadelia could consider this too hard or object to it, there is another ring at the door, and it's Atra, who is looking for Cadelia. The Isaribi has arrived within sight of the Dork colonies, and so she said, hey, let's all go up to the bridge and take a look.
The bridge is full of most of the command staff, Biscuit pointing out which colony is which. Most of what's said is about Dort 2, which is where the Isaribi will be making Tewas's cargo drop, and Dort 3, which consists of commercial districts and upper-class Earth family homes. Meanwhile, it's Mika who notices that if you squint, you can see something a little past the colonies, a blue dot that he pegs as Earth. Mika's also first and only to notice that Fumitan's response to Cadelia's requesting to stop on Dort 3 for some quick shopping is balling her fist, but he says nothing.
Balling up your fist when someone asks you to go shopping is just basically a fucking Arthur meme.
Yeah, they spend so much... There are too many shots of Fumitan looking like real shifty and upset in this episode. It happens like six times.
I can't believe all of these children are too emotionally unintelligent to catch it.
Well, here's the thing. Mika notices this on the bridge, at least. Like he sees that she looks away and looks down. And I don't know if this comes up next episode or not, but I did see that.
So... I've said this to you last recording, but next time is going to be the end of the Fumitan arc. She gets an episode title.
Right, you've told me about the episode.
Atra invites herself along shopping, and Orga says, well, all right, but I'm sending Mika with you. All sorts of surprises could happen, and I want to make sure you're in good hands. And Biscuit just like, can I go with them also? And he's like, yeah, whatever, God. And then, you know, which is so fucking funny because he had no plans to call or actually talk to his brother. So he just wanted to hang out and try to like soak up some of his vibes by being in the same county.
He just wanted to go to space, Costco.
It's so sad. dude, do you think is it still like $1.59 in the future?
Yes, 100%.
They're both drinking the drink. They've eaten the dog. Did the price go up?
No.
But the thing is, okay, I think the price stayed the same, but the dog has changed. It's probably more synthetic.
Here's what I think, is I think that the Costco hot dog drink combo became like the new gold standard, and that's what space currency is pegged at.
I believe it. I do know that they have changed the recipe in my lifetime, because before I stopped eating meat, it was no longer Hebrew National Dogs.
The dogs are still really good.
They are still really good. They're just not Hebrew National anymore, which was a thing they advertised
Costco
at one
just
point.
Just for a hot dog, actually.
God, I don't hate hot dogs, but hot dogs, to me, are like... what are like the lowest tier of foods? Like, it's a but that's fine sometimes.
Again, at one point, just buying a 3-pack of Hebrew Nationals at Costco would be great for garbage midnight snacks or whatever. Just cut shit up, throw it over some tortilla chips, make yourself some little ghetto nachos. It's great.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, when you get the Costco dog, the bun is good also. It's not just like the shitty, like,
the white
grocery
bread
store
style.
Brand bun. I'm going to go to Costco later for hot dogs, I think. You want to go to Costco?
Yo, hot dog. Yo, potato buns, where it's at.
We can get other stuff besides the hot dog.
Yeah. Okay. Check it out.
Denied.
I would say, check it out. It's St. Patty's Day, and we're talking about potato buns. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. We already did some... We already belittled the Irish on the other podcast also.
You belittled the Irish. I did nothing of the sort.
With the two girls starting a feedback loop of excitement to go to the store, which, like, that's fair. Going to the store rocks. You just push a little cart around. It's the best.
Especially when you've been in space for months.
Yeah, Fumitan just has to grin and bear it as she loses her ability to, like, deliver on an execution. We then stop on over to the Hammerhead as the ships approach. Akihiro and the Gushin have come over to get some work done with the Hammerhead's better-equipped maintenance bay. Laughter asks if he's fucking lost it, wanting to pilot the suit that killed his brother. But he says he's deadly serious, and someone in the background is like, Jesus Christ, Laughter!
Yeah, that's Ozzy. Ozzy immediately is like, holy shit! In his ready room, Naze says he would love to come along and help out, but he's got to check in with the Tewa's branch office on Dort 6, so the Hammerhead and crew will be occupied. Naze and Amida then stress, do not fuck with Gjallarhorn. Being directly besides Earth means this is the top-of-the-class, high-ranked troops, not the stragglers who got shunted to the Outer Sphere station. Eugene continues going, well, we won't know if we're that good until we try, and Amida basically tells the boys, shut the fuck up, Don't try anything. If you kill someone, you'll be arrested, the ship will be impounded, and Naze cuts her off a little. She's like, look, in the outer sphere, Tewaz's name carries a lot of weight, but right here on Gjallarhorn's home turf, we are another corporation. They make the rules, and their rules are law and order.
Speaking of, we cut to an Earth orbital Gjallarhorn base. Galio is preparing to launch a Baudouin family craft with Ein coming aboard, hesitantly. The two of them have heard from the mustache man that the Izaribi is at the Dork colonies, and Ein's going, so can we do this? We don't have orders to go there. And Galio simply says, what? We can't just be on a training exercise? And it just so happens that as part of our exercise, you know, if something happens to pop off during this training exercise, you might get your wish of killing those five children. And this gets Ein finally on board with the idea, and he just salutes with aplomb.
Cadelia and crew take one of the shuttles to head for Dort 3, where Fuintan is beginning to silently crack under the pressure of her twin directives. But enough about that. The Isaribi is greeted with open arms and welcomed into Dort 2 by a shuttlecraft. On arrival, Dort Union workers are excited to meet the crew, expecting them to be older. True, but having already started to treat the Isaribi as a shining beacon of hope between Cadelia and her young knights.
God, Union should get fucking, like, Teamster jackets. That would fucking rule. These guys have matching jackets because they're in the same union.
That is actually coding them in a salaryman fashion. That is what this uniform is meant to play back to.
It's fine. We need union. We need union like varsity jackets. Like cool. Like get a big tiger on the back.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, just turn it into like biker gang iconography, yeah. But for unions. Yeah.
Okay. You know what? If we actually get to go full Yakuza with this, fine. Yeah, I'm in.
Hell yeah! You know just leave the German
crosses. We technically already have this, and it's the cute little post office shorts.
I came so close to getting a job with one of the local ones, but unfortunately they cut me out at the last minute.
Over on Dort 3, Cadelia is taking the crew through Space Costco. Biscuit is a little surprised that this is what she meant by shopping, as she loads up on jugs of something into the cart. And she rebuts with a question, when is the last time you two washed properly? Biscuit has to think, and he's pretty sure it was about a week.
See, this is how you know that Biscuit is asexual, because after 4 or 5 days, you are gonna get an ingrown hair on your testicles. Too long. Don't worry about it.
What?
Biscuit never jacks it. That's what we're saying.
I think you've revealed something about yourself more than just a casual fact about most people, Chris.
People jack it. Are you trying to tell? Is that what we're saying here?
No, the ingrown hairs thing.
I'm trying to tell you that you might have some.
I'm just saying, after 4 and 5 days, it gets real. You get real gross. You get real swampy. No matter who you are, 4 or 5 days too long.
No,
I can definitely say, like, the way someone you described who's had folliculitis, that's a you problem.
Cadelia says that the ship's hygiene is concerning. Atre even says that Yuki Nojo could be literally eye-searing on heavy work days, and she gags when too many people are gathered in the same room, so everyone's gonna get fresh clothes, detergent, and shampoos. And meanwhile, Mika and Biscuit take up a watch at the store entrance in case of threats and eat their hot dogs. As they do, we learn a bit of Biscuit's backstory. He's not Martian-born. He, his mother, and father all lived on the slums of Dort 2. Similarly, the laborers talking with Orga and the lads as they work, say that they get fucked on wages. If you're not on Earth or transferred from Earth, good luck making any money. Orga's hearing them talk up how much Cadelia and Tekadon have already made a name for themselves among the laborers, and he's not really liking the fact that they're already legends somehow. He asks how they heard about the crew, and the workers say that their patron talked the lads up.
Before Orga can hear who that patron is, though, we cut back to You have an older brother, Biscuit? Turns out only 3 of the Griffin children got adopted by Grandma when their parents died. The oldest, Severin, was going to school at the time, and he was taken in by a company executive since he was already on that track.
Imagine naming your first child Severin, and then after that you're like, Bisky, Cookie, and Cracker.
What I think happened is that he got a new name when he got adopted by this other family. That's what I think happened.
What snack do we think it was?
Saffron is a snack, you know. It's a cake.
No, I is don't it? Know.
Yeah,
I did not know
a
that.
Ring-shaped okay, well, cake then. Soaked with syrup and garnished with cream. So it's
really
literally.
All right, all right. Well, then never mind then. Then he's still part of the family.
Yeah, I had to double check, but it's like, no, I'm pretty
no
sure.
No one steal
thing.
My plug of going to Costco, by the way.
Great, I'm not going to. It's great. I have the membership, but I'm not going to just go, hey, Costco, out of nowhere.
Whatever. No. You gotta pimp Sam's Club.
Civil got LSD. I plugged the concept of pre-drilling holes.
What?
How fucking care? Just whatever.
It's a good idea. You should do it.
Dude, I play SnowRunner, and even I think you're getting too dad-coded. Anyway,
look,
Severin
no
is...
matter what kind of hole it is, you should pre-drill it.
Fair enough. Severin's probably still on Dort 3, but Biscuit is unwilling to call him out of the blue before Atra just screams, "Stop making excuses!" So Biscuit calls Severin, and while Big Bro is shocked, he's real happy to hear his brother's voice. Up until he says he's here because he works for an organization named Tekadan. We then see Severin's computer terminal, where a photo of the Isaribi is front and center. If you pause and zoom in, the English is just as clear as Fumitan's terminal, and it tells us apparently the labor unions have just imported weapons for an armed uprising, believed they were supplied by couriers named Tekadan.
Yeah. So the interesting thing with Severin, I mean, like, the office he's in feels extremely like a, like, stockbroker sweatshop from back in the day. Like, really, really tons of packed cubicles all over the place. And I do also, I'm sure this is gonna mostly break bad no matter what, but, like, I was wondering if this news was sent out before the uprising, any of the uprising stuff happened, and like this would be a tip off to Severin that like something weird is happening. Why would my brother be calling me if this other thing was happening with the company he works for?
Well, this is like explicitly like a false flag, Matt.
I know that. No, I know that. But I'm saying like trying to punch a hole in that idea of like, wait, why would he announce himself if this was the thing that was going to happen?
Well,
or maybe he just didn't know.
We can come back to that. We will have more Severin time next recording.
No, I'm sure. Because, like, so what happens next is that Severin keeps silent for a second. We don't hear the details, but Biscuit hangs up from the call and says he agreed to meet up with him. Which, I mean, right now I'm like, that's 50-50 between he says he meets up with him and says, get the fuck out of Tekadan, shit's going wrong, or it turns into a sting. I don't know yet. I'm just going to be surprised when we get to that episode. Atra offers to come along too for support. God, there's so many places here where there's like enough dramatic irony where I'm like, okay, I know someone is going to die here or something's going to break bad for some of these characters. Who is it that's going to get the short end of the stick because they didn't realize what they were walking into? And like, I'm just like focused on Atra, like, she could die.
Matt's like, when will things finally go wrong for the child soldiers?
You know what I mean? The characters with like names that are like plot, super plot relevant, like, in terms of, like, the Tekadan characters, is there anyone that we really spent much time with who died in the crew yet? Or it's mostly other kids.
Matt, you've seen... I was going to say you've seen a Gundam before, but not really. But you've seen a Tamino
no.
property, even though this isn't one. You know how it goes.
I know. I'm just saying, so far, they haven't pulled that trigger yet. I'm waiting for it.
It happens at the end.
Yeah, which we're getting at least close to this half. Yeah, so Atra decides to push this along and sort of go with him. And the team splits up on Dort 3. Meanwhile, on door two, yeah, the boys just happen to have delivered an entire armed uprising with cannon-equipped mobile workers and crates full of full of machine guns.
Hell yeah!
And somehow, how did this happen under their nose? Who knows?
Well, they didn't open the crates. You don't do that.
Your Amazon driver doesn't open your box to make sure what's supposed to be in there is in there, Matt.
You think that Tawaz would be like, at least, you assume they're good for it, right? They're not going to set these kids up on their first mission to do this.
They're blood brothers, Matt.
Yeah, we'll start unpacking how this happened. We're going through a mystery.
Yeah, because, I mean, Marabit has no idea what happened here. Like, she's surprised, too. Yeah, Orga can't get a straight answer from the workers on who this mysterious patron was that told them all about Tekadon and talked up Kudeli a lot. But he's called himself a proxy for Kudelia. And he said that Kudelia was moving on from mere Martian independence to a full-scale rebellion against Earth and Gjallarhorn. Wild. And this is where Gjallarhorn transports bust in full of cops, telling everyone to drop their weapons.
The Tekadon crew comply, knowing that they're in some deep crap, but one of the workers sets off the whole thing when they fire shots right through an officer. The revolution has begun, and Tekadon are now firmly in the middle of it, with their ship docked and having just unloaded the entire arms deal. Unable to get back, Orga tells his men, "Do not fire on Gjallarhorn, keep your heads down." He runs to a phone and dials the ship, telling Marabet she's in charge, get the ship out of the dry dock. She doesn't know the whole scenario, but she gets the message. All she can convey before cutting off the comms and launching off is that their client for this mission was GN Trading, a name neither of them have heard, which I also wonder is a Gundam 00 reference with the GM drives.
It's not, because Chris just nailed it immediately.
Yeah, it's Gordon Nobles, the guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that also makes sense, too.
Yeah.
It still could be a GN Drive reference.
It's not, I'm sorry.
It's not.
It could be levels deep.
Go outside!
No.
With everything escalating, we take stock of most of our crew on the way to the ending. Mika, Kudelia, and Fumitan are still safely anonymous on Dort 3. Fumitan has taken Kudelia out of harm's way, since the plan was for her to eat an assassin's bullet and be present in the rebellion on Dort 2. Meanwhile, the younger woman keeps trying to find the courage to ask Mika what his feelings are, and whiffing. In space, the Isaribi makes it clear, signaling the Hammerhead for help. Naze doesn't respond just yet, being aware that Tekadan's name now has a black mark on it. And on Dort 2, the Gjallarhorn troops pile back into their transports, retreating from the armed laborers. Orga tells them that this is a fight stacked against them, but the laborers say now that they got no choice but to win or die. The Tekadon troops ask Orga what their next move is, and he says he has no idea, because Orga doesn't know that he's also a laborer.
There is a new ending theme as well this week, Steel by True. Not much to say about it. Yes, it's an ending montage of the cast in non-lethal situations, same as the last one.
You see a lot of Orga and Mika as like little kids, which we haven't seen in time.
Yeah, it bookends the whole animation.
Yeah.
With that done, any thoughts? What do we got this week?
So, I mean, I'm still enjoying the show. I think there's a couple of good emotional beats. I like that they're not. Well, they're kind of stringing along the Kudelia Mika thing, but I feel like they've at least given it a little bit more of a push than I would have expected, because it felt like it was going to be a really slow burn, and now they're kind of moving on to something. But although, you know, Mika is still very much like kind of flat. They raised the thing of like, maybe he's just burying all of his emotions, and maybe by the end of this, he'll crack and they'll actually come out, and he'll be less of his like stoic flat self that we're seeing here.
You should definitely be asking, what's Mika's deal more through these episodes?
Yeah, because I'm curious, like, what's Mika's deal? He decided to kiss Kudelia, and now he's just like, yeah, whatever. So, and I'm, you know, I like the political machination stuff happening here. Like, it's keeping things interesting. And, of course, you know, Tekkadan can't have an easy time at all. So, so getting caught in the middle of this is like, well, shit.
You can't describe this as keeping things interesting when we had a 10-minute discussion last episode where you're like, wow, nothing has happened. I wish something would happen.
I mean, things were happening, but, like, there was a lot of setup in the last few episodes of, like, here's Tewaz, you know, or here's, yeah, like, the Hammerhead crew in Naze, here's Tewaz, let's get them together, all right, we're finally on the thing, we're going to Earth, and now we're at Earth.
It's a, long time scale story, and again, yeah. Like the quote, there are episodes where nothing happens, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but things are really popping off now.
Well, the other thing is, all of this is not what we've been leading up to with Correct. Where the story was going. McGillis Correct. Is going, I would like to capture Cudelia. Meanwhile, Galio's like, well, my buddy's on vacation having married my sister. Now what if we start trying to kill kids and go against his plans? And meanwhile, Gordon Noblis is just like, Cudelia must die.
Yeah, the easiest way to successfully win the political negotiation for quote-unquote independence so you can have... So certain forms of independence are really just trading out your colonial oppressor for a different one, and the easiest way to do that is to have this political martyr.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's probably worth also mentioning in the next time on, I mean, cut this, Sybil, if you want to, but we see... a gold mask come out.
Oh, no, that's actually our ending joke this week, which is, do you want masked pilots? Because armed insurrection is how you get masked pilots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, man, so I'm excited to see where...
We do.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm excited to see how that happens and where that goes.
Garrett.
Pretty good. I mean, no complaints. Can just kind of win for things to continue with the escalation and move on and all that stuff. Get some stuff resolved.
Well, good news! We're definitely gonna resolve some things, possibly by force.
Probably with murder.
Some things and some people.
Yeah! Yeah, good news! You won't have to remember as many names of children soon.
Hooray?
Hey, take that how you will. I've heard some complaints from various hosts. With that, who's got plugs?
Yeah! Lightning strikes thrice. We're doing Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter. Go check that out. It's cool. Also, we're doing another anime show, at least for now. We're doing Terror in Residence. That is also, well, I don't know if it's cool, but it's fun. Chris, you could be the one to determine whether or not the terrorism is cool. Terrorism I'm going to leave that up cool. to you. There you go.
Check it out.
And...
my plug for the week is doing terrorism, I guess.
Fuck. Anyway, I set you up for that one.
Do not terrorize the Costco. I go to the Costco.
I would.
That is
never.
The whitest thing I'm ever going to say.
Critical
on this
support
show.
For Costco.
Shit. Also, we're gonna have a few episodes out by the time this comes out of Radio Manga. We're doing a little bit of catch up, so it's gonna be a bit of a barrage. But Sybil and I are talking a lot about manga recently. Go check those out. And I write reviews of Yuri Media on Okazu, so go check those out as well.
The transition from, we're going to do one of these, like, every month or two, to, oh no, now we have to catch up, was so fast.
Carrot, anything?
I sometimes talk about Karate Bugman on the internet at JourneyThroughTheDecacast.com.
You got one this year.
That's true. So that's like what? Like one half of what I did last year?
You said it, not me.
Ooh.
I think it's actually closer to one-fourth.
You know, after all of the riffing on this, Garrett, I never looked it up.
It's fine if I
so
do the riffing
more
myself.
It's dire than I ever imagined.
I mean, the show is also down a host now.
That's true.
Did they die of old age waiting to record a new episode?
No, that would just be me.
And with that, I'm just going to say, check out a nice RPG. Treat yourself to something you could dig into with a little bit of character building. Enjoy yourself. Don't play bad puzzle games that think they're fucking deep like some idiot I know has.
Is it you?
It is me! We can't talk about the curing your lesbian puzzle game.
You could have just played Steven Sausage Roll.
I could, but fuck Steven Sausage Roll.
Steven Sausage Roll may be a perfect video game.
English Country Tune was better, and I bought Steven Sausage Roll because...
English Country Tune is dog shit.
No! This is exactly where we just...
Wait. I'm thinking of the one... Is English Country Tune the one where you're the cube rolling around on the sphere? What is that?
The flat plane?
Yeah.
That's the one, yeah, where it starts getting more and more 3D and does that different mechanics. I love that game. That is absolutely what I want out of Incrapare, not more Steven Sausage Roll shit. Steven Sausage Roll is just fucking Sokoban with more rules.
And it's a perfect video game.
Well, you have fun pushing your fucking boxes, warehouse man.
I will.
Look, what if they were Costco dogs, Sybil? What if they were Costco dogs?
Well, then someone would know how to grill them and wouldn't need a fucking robot to do it.
Ah!
We'll be back in 2 weeks with episodes 15 and 16, where once again, armed insurrection is how you get masked pilots. See ya!
Bye.
Bye.